an article on Newsroom called My Interest, and it was about whether or not we should accept Chinese funding for large-scale projects. It's already got your interest, quite a few texts on that already. Now, National Leader Chris Luxon said he would absolutely accept, his words, money from China to fund new roads. New Zealand's giant infrastructure, New Zealand's infrastructure hole, it's huge, estimated at $210 billion. Where will that money come from? Well, our next guest says that we should think again if we want to accept Chinese funding for infrastructure projects. With us is Dr. Oliver Hartwood, an executive director of the Business Funded New Zealand Initiative. Dr. Hartwood, welcome.
Good afternoon.
So, why not China?
Well, because this is not normal commercial funding. This is not a sovereign wealth fund, for example, that would invest in projects on a commercial basis. This Belt and Road Initiative we're talking about here has a political component to it. This is a Chinese foreign policy tool. It is a tool to really demark China's sphere of influence. And so, therefore, we have to be really cautious about whether we would want to engage with that. And I would warn New Zealand against engaging with the Belt and Road Initiative, and more countries around the world that previously engaged with China on Belt and Road have actually rethought their engagement and in some cases actually left the Belt and Road Initiative. The latest example of that being Italy. They announced last week they're pulling out, but we've seen similar developments in other countries. The Baltic states pulled out of a similar associated initiative with China. The Czech Republic is doing that. And, of course, we've seen the results of engaging with China on Belt and Road most clearly in the case of Sri Lanka, in which Belt and Road actually contributed significantly to Sri Lanka's economic troubles.
Oh, okay. That's interesting here because we had a text asking about Sri Lanka. For those who don't know what this Belt and Road Initiative is, or Silk Road, explain in brief for us.
Well, the Belt and Road Initiative goes back about a decade, started really in 2013 under President Xi Jinping. The idea was that China would finance infrastructure in countries around the world, and the idea was China had a surplus amount of cash at the time. They thought if they finance roads, if they finance airports, infrastructure, ports, whatever it might be, that would help China do business with these countries. At least that's how it was sold. And initially, that seemed like a relatively good kind of initiative because it would be a win-win situation. However, over the last few years, it has become increasingly clear that this is not just a kind of commercial initiative. This was actually a tool used to get countries closer into the Chinese sphere of influence. And sometimes these projects, of course, were not particularly well run. They didn't make any commercial sense. And especially if you look at the case of Sri Lanka, there was a case, for example, where the Chinese financed a new port out of that for which there was no commercial basis. Then the Sri Lankan government actually found it very hard to service the debt on this because this port project didn't make any sense. In the end, the Chinese converted the money they'd given into a 99-year lease of the facility, and so therefore they have cemented their influence and their position in that country.
Oliver, we've got a panel here. Let's go around the panel first and then come back to you. Phil, you first.
So, yeah, Oliver, I agree with you about Belt and Road. It's been seen to be, it's not all it was made out to be, but without wanting to put words in Luxon's mouth, he didn't actually mention the Belt and Road, did he? He
said, no.
The question was asked was, would he accept Chinese funding for roads? And he said yes.
Phil, I think he was specifically asked, would you take money from Belt and Road? And Luxon's response was absolutly.
Okay, well, you're one over me on that. And if that's the case, he should not. But I think what he was driving at more, if I understand a bit about the National Party policy on this, was if a Canadian pension fund wants to invest, great. If the US wants to invest, fantastic. If Australia wants to invest, good. If China wants to invest, Taiwan, great. All that. I think it was more of the driver of that. I think, you know, he's clearly misspoke, and I don't want to apologize for him or anything, but I think, you know, that's, I think, the driver here. And if it is Chinese Belt and Road, then I'm with you. I wouldn't buy that either. But I'd buy all sorts of other foreign funding, which also can come with some strings, which we also need to be careful of.
Stay there, Oliver. Anna as well.
It's interesting, Oliver. I was wondering if, I mean, we've seen lots of strife in places like Fiji and around the Pacific. And, I mean, what are the consequences for a country like New Zealand if we did get into large amounts of debt with China for these kinds of projects?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, on Phil's point, totally agree. We should be open to international capital, and we are not at the moment. And I have absolutely no problem with Canadian pension funds investing or the the Australians or Temasek from Singapore or even Chinese companies buying into New Zealand companies. I don't even mind Chinese investment, to be very clear. So the problem really is specifically Belt and Road. I can only hope that Luxon misspoke, that he probably wasn't entirely on top of Belt and Road, and that when the journalist asked the question, would you take money from Belt and Road too, and he said absolutely, that was just simply a mistake. But I think if it goes beyond that, if we are actually joining a Chinese political initiative, we should be very careful. And that was on your other comment, of course. The dangers are really you are engaging in a political kind of dynamism here that you wouldn't want to be part of, especially at a time when China is behaving much more aggressively than they used to. And we have also seen, of course, the Chinese position vis-a-vis Ukraine, where they're tacitly supporting the Russian aggression on Ukraine. So I think in all of these circumstances, I would take a very cautious line on engaging with China on something that is deep down, not a commercial project, but a political one.
You do want to come in, Phil?
Oh, no, I think that's right, Oliver. I mean, what you're seeing, these debt traps that Oliver talks about are absolutely real. That Sri Lankan story is absolutely right. But I do think we need to be open to foreign investment. And if that means that we're going to get China Construction Bank or something funding something on a commercial terms, fine. No problem there at all. It's more the politics of it that we need to be cautious of. That's right.
Can't we? This might throw the cat and the pigeons, Oliver. Why don't we? Well, last week we talked about bring back the Ministry of Works. Forget about overseas funding. You know, we built, there was a time, Dr. Harwish, we built massive, and I mean massive infrastructure, like dams, with from the government. The government, the Ministry of Works. What about that?
I think there are much better ways of actually financing things, and actually the key to solving our infrastructure problems might lie in New Zealand's past. We actually produced a report not so long ago here at the New Zealand Initiative.
Yeah, I read it, yes.
Paving the road. Yes, we looked into historical examples of New Zealand infrastructure. For example, the Auckland Harbour Bridge. That was financed out of revenue generated from the Harbour Bridge, and we should do more of these revenue bonds. We've done it in the past. We have a good history of doing it in this kind of way. We simply seem to have forgotten how that works.
Very good. Nice to have you on the program, Dr. Harwich there from the New Zealand Initiative, the executive director there.